If you look at the laptop sitting on your desk right now, or well, even the phone in your pocket, you're essentially looking at a sealed box.
Oh, entirely. Yeah.
I mean, think about it. If you go out and buy a brand new car today and pop the hood, you aren't greeted by a recognizable engine anymore, right?
No, not at all. Just a giant piece of molded plastic.
Exactly. A shield. It basically says, do not touch, no user serviceable parts inside. Please take this back to the dealership.
Right. You're definitely not tuning the carburetor on a modern EV.
No, you're not. And modern computing has become the exact same thing. We carry around these sealed glass and aluminum boxes of someone else's decisions.
Someone else's very intentional decisions, I might add.
Right, because they are rented, they are metered, and increasingly they are precision tuned to just harvest your attention.
Yeah, it's a massive shift from actual ownership to the state of like passive tenancy.
Passive tenancy. Wow, that's a good way to put it.
Yeah, because you might hold the physical device in your hands, but you don't really control the ecosystem inside it. You're just a guest in a walled garden.
Okay, let's unpack this because a growing community of people are refusing to accept those sealed boxes.
Yeah, the Cyberdeck community.
Exactly. They are building their own machines from scratch, specifically Raspberry Pi Cyberdecks, to physically force a change in how they interact with the digital world.
Which is so cool.
It is. And today, we're going to use this deep dive to explore exactly how building a machine with your own two hands completely redefines that relationship.
If we connect this to the bigger picture, this entire movement is actively reframing what a computer should actually be.
Right, because I think a lot of people see these devices and misunderstand them.
Oh, totally. It is very easy to look at a hand-built, slightly chunky, ruggedized computer and dismiss it as just retro nostalgia.
Like cyberpunk cosplay or something.
Exactly, like a movie prop. But it is fundamentally about agency. It is about personal sovereignty.
Because you actually know what's in it.
Yes. When you build your own computer, you understand your tools intimately. You know exactly what hardware is in there. You know it can be opened and repaired.
Because you were the one who tightened the screws in the first place.
Right. And most importantly, your attention stays entirely yours.
Because it's a machine built for a purpose, not a machine built to serve you an infinite feed of, content.
Exactly.
But to reclaim that agency, you can't just go to a big box store and buy a new gadget off the shelf.
No, you have to actually build one.
Right. And the community approaches this through a very distinct rhythm, which I love. It's built around four modes of thinking: plan, build, tend, and live.
Or as the mindsets are often called, curious, constructive, caring, and chill.
Curious, constructive, caring, and chill. I love that.
Yeah, which means you can't just skip straight to the soldering iron. You have to start in that curious mode, which is the blueprint phase.
And the number one rule here is actually really fascinating to me. Do not start with a shopping cart full of parts.
Huge mistake. People love buying parts.
Right. But you're supposed to start with a question. You have to ask yourself, what is this deck actually for?
Because if you don't define the specific computing you need, you're just going to build another distraction machine.
Exactly. So, what shapes do these devices actually take once you answer that question?
Well, they generally fall into three distinct archetypes, depending on your needs. The first is the pocket deck.
Okay, pocket deck.
Yeah, this is your stealth option. It literally slips into a jacket pocket. Builders usually center this around a tiny $15 board called the Pi Zero 2W.
Wow, $15.
Right. And you pair that with a small, like 4 to 5 inch display, sometimes an e-ink screen if you want a display that looks like physical paper and uses almost zero battery.
But wait, how do you type on something that small?
So you typically use what's called a 40% ortholinear keyboard.
Okay, ortholinear. What does that actually mean for the person typing?
So think about a standard keyboard. The keys are staggered diagonally,
Yeah,
really.
like a typewriter legacy thing.
Exactly. An ortholinear keyboard places every key in perfect straight grid columns.
Oh, weird. Okay.
And a 40% size means it strips away the number row, the function keys, the arrow keys.
Wow. So just the letters, basically.
Pretty much. It's aggressively minimized purely for typing efficiency and a tiny footprint. It runs for hours on just 1 or 2 watts of power.
That's incredible.
It's essentially a distraction-free terminal. It's perfect for writing a novel or esteching.
Which is securely tapping into a remote server via a text interface,
Yeah,
right?
exactly. Doing that while you're just like sitting on a train.
So it's a tool with a very narrow, very sharp focus. But what if you need to do more than just type text?
Yeah.
What if you need, a real workhorse?
That brings us to Architect 2, which is the Field Deck.
Okay, the Field Deck.
Yeah, this is the classic CyberDepth shape most people picture when they hear the word. It's rugged, it's meant to go off-grid, and it's built around the much more powerful Raspberry Pi 5.
Right, the new flagship.
Exactly. You're giving it a proper 7-inch touch display, a slightly larger 60% mechanical keyboard so you can actually type comfortably for hours, and you power it with a UPS HAT.
A UPS HAT. Let's break that down for the listener.
Right. So HAT stands for hardware attached on top. It's really just an expansion board that snaps directly onto the pins of the Raspberry Pi.
Got it.
And a UPS HAT acts as an uninterruptible power supply. You feed that power supply using 1,850 batteries.
Okay, I heard of those.
Yeah, those are the thick, cylindrical lithium cells you'd find packed by the thousands inside an electric car chassis.
Oh, wow, so serious power.
Very serious. They are incredibly dense, reliable power.
So that's the machine you build to do real work anywhere, whether you're at a coffee shop or totally off the grid in the woods.
Right.
And then there's the third archetype, which is essentially the opposite of the Field Deck, right? The desk deck.
Yeah, the desk deck, this one doesn't move.
Because it has wall power, so you don't even worry about batteries.
Exactly. You just max out the RAM on a Pi 5,
Yeah.
add massive solid-state storage, and run it as your stay-at-home, self-hosted brain.
This is the machine you build to run your own local AI models, host your own files, basically run your own personal cloud.
Spot on.
Yeah.
And your choice of archetype dictates the brain you're going to use. Like we said, right now, the flagship is that Raspberry Pi 5.
Yeah.
It is a massive leap forward for DIY computing.
Yeah.
But there's a vital constraint builders have to navigate right now, specifically regarding RAM.
Right, because my first instinct as a consumer, you know, whenever I buy a new device, is to just buy the highest RAM available to future-proof it.
Oh, everyone does that.
Right, like why not just grab the 16-gigabyte model and be done with it?
Well, it's a totally logical instinct, but there's a practical reality here. Through early 2026, the tech industry saw these significant RAM-driven price hikes.
Oh, that's right, I remember that.
Yeah, so those 8 and 16-gigabyte models became noticeably pricier. Unless you are building that stationary deck specifically to run heavy local large language models, paying that premium just isn't worth it.
Really? So what do you recommend?
For the vast majority of builds, especially the Field Deck, the 4-gigabyte model is the absolute sweet spot.
4 gigabytes is enough.
Oh yeah, it runs a full desktop perfectly without breaking the bank.
Okay, here's where it gets really interesting though. You've picked your archetype, let's say the 4-gigabyte Pi 5 Field Deck.
Yep.
There is a really counterintuitive rule in this community for the planning phase. Before you buy a single wire or microchip, you are supposed to get a physical piece of paper and sketch the deck at a one-to-one scale.
You literally draw it out.
Right. You trace the keyboard, trace the screen, trace the battery footprint. But I have to ask, why go totally analog to plan a digital device? Why not just use free 3D modeling software on your current computer?
Because when you sketch it one-to-one on physical paper, you are instantly confronted with the ultimate, unforgiving physical constraint of custom hardware.
Which is?
Battery mass. Electrons require physical space to be stored, right? When you draw it out, you realize, oh, if the screen flips up here and the mechanical keyboard sits here, where on earth does this giant heavy block of lithium cells go?
It forces you to deal with the physics before you deal with the aesthetics.
Exactly. Figuring out the physical volume on paper prevents you from, like, 3D printing a sleek, beautiful enclosure, only to realize the battery pack won't physically fit inside it.
That makes total sense.
Yeah, it saves you a tremendous amount of money and frustration.
Because the physics of power storage don't care about your cool design.
Not even a little bit.
Okay, so once you've sketched those physical constraints on paper, you cross over into the second mode, constructive.
Time to actually build it.
Yes. And we are going to zoom in on that classic archetype, the Field Deck.
The quintessential weekend project.
Right. The source mentions you can build this in a single weekend, and the budget hovers right around $250 to $450 US.
Which is pretty reasonable for a custom computer.
It really is. The recipe is incredibly solid. You've got your Pi 5, your mechanical keyboard, and a 7-inch display. But there's a specific tip here about the display.
Yeah, using a DSI connection.
Right. What makes DSI better than just, you know, plugging in a standard HDMI cable?
So DSI stands for Display Serial Interface. It's a flat ribbon cable that wires the screen directly to a dedicated port on the Raspberry Pi motherboard.
Oh, okay. So it doesn't plug into the outside.
Exactly. By using DSI, you leave both of your HDMI ports and all your USB ports completely free for other peripherals.
You're maximizing the utility of the board.
Precisely. And then you house all of this in a rugged enclosure, typically 3D printed out of PTG.
PTG being a type of plastic. Right?
Yes. It's a very tough, heat-resistant plastic.
Yeah.
Much better suited for a machine that might get left in a hot car than standard brittle 3D printing filaments.
Okay. But within that rugged PTG case, there are a few components that are strictly mandatory. First and foremost, cooling. The official $5 active cooler for the Pi 5. Why is this so critical?
Because the Pi 5 operates at a completely different performance level than older microcomputers.
It runs hotter.
Significantly hotter. If you put it inside a sealed, rugged plastic case without that specific cooler, the machine will thermal throttle almost immediately.
Meaning it actively slows itself down.
Exactly. To prevent the silicon from literally melting, the processor forcibly drops its clock speed. So your snappy, fast computer suddenly feels like it's wading through molasses.
Oh, that sounds awful.
It is. You absolutely must have active cooling.
Got it. Now, the other major upgrade for a modern field deck is how you handle storage. For years, Raspberry Pis ran off little microSD cards, right? Like the kind you put in a digital camera.
Right.
But this recipe calls for a 256 gigabyte NVMe SSD. Why the big switch?
Because it changes the game entirely. An NVMe drive is a high-speed, solid-state drive. And for the first time, the Pi 5 features true PCIe support.
Okay, so that's a lot faster.
Way faster. That means you can wire that lightning-fast drive directly to the brain of the computer, completely bypassing the slow USB bottlenecks of the past.
And it's more reliable than an SD card, I assume.
Oh, infinitely more. MicroSD cards are notoriously fragile. If your battery dies mid-task, an SD card can easily corrupt its data.
Oh, that's a nightmare.
Yeah, an SSD handles constant reading and writing exponentially better. Although I will say it is a best practice in the community to keep a cheap 32 gigabyte microSD card tucked away in your kit.
Really?
With a backup operating system on it just for rescue boots. You design redundancy in from day one.
That is so smart. Okay, so you have all the parts on your bench, the assembly process begins, and the very first step the community insists on is to flash your operating system, typically the official Debian-based Raspberry Pi OS, and do it headless.
Yes, before you turn a single screw.
Right, meaning you pre-configure your Wi-Fi network and your secure login settings directly onto the drive using another computer.
Exactly.
Yeah.
That way, when the deck powers on for the first time, it seamlessly joins your network without needing a monitor attached.
But as we get into the actual physical assembly, I've got a bit of a question about wiring.
Let's hear it.
So if I am building a portable computer, a field deck that's meant to be thrown into a backpack or rattled around on a train, my instinct is to leave a little slack in the internal wires.
Yeah.
Right. So if the case flexes or components shift slightly, the cables have room to bend instead of snapping. But the community vehemently argues against this.
They really do.
They insist on extremely short, perfectly tight cable runs. Why is my instinct so wrong?
Oh, it's a highly intuitive thought. But in custom portable electronics, slack is actually the enemy. Slack is exactly what cracks connectors.
Wait, how so?
Think about the physics of kinetic energy. If a wire has slack, that loop of wire has independent mass. Every time you drop your bag on the floor, that loop of wire acts like a tiny whip inside the case.
Oh, jeez.
It jerks back and forth, and all that kinetic energy transfers directly into the microscopic, fragile solder joints where the wire connects to the board.
Oh, I see. And eventually those joints crack.
Precisely. So by keeping the cables incredibly tight and dressed against the chassis, they can't move independently. You turn a loose collection of jiggling parts into one solid-state brick.
Wow. Nothing yanks on the ports.
Exactly. Which brings us to the absolute golden rule of the constructive mode.
Yeah.
Bench boot first.
Yes, the builder's mantra. A deck that works in a cardboard box beats a beautiful case with no guts.
It's so true. You never screw the enclosure shut until you've built the entire system raw, spread out on your workbench.
Just to make sure it actually works.
Right. You verify the screen receives a signal, you boot into the operating system, and you do the crucial software step of editing the EEPROM.
The EEPROM. Let's decode that for the listener real quick.
Sure. It's a tiny chip on the motherboard that holds the most fundamental instructions for waking the computer up.
Okay.
Out of the box, it's programmed to look for an SD card to start Linux. You have to go into that chip and explicitly rewrite its instructions.
Telling it to ignore the SD slot.
Exactly. Telling it, ignore the SD slot, boot directly from that super fast NVMe drive we just attached.
And part of this workbench phase is also the power stress test, right?
Crucial step. The Pi 5 requires highly specific power delivery to be fully happy. 5 volts at 5 amps, which equals 27 watts of power.
And what happens if it doesn't get that?
Well, if your battery pack or your custom wiring can't deliver that full 27 watts, the Pi will still turn on, but it will artificially limit the electrical current going to your USB ports.
Meaning things just start working.
Yeah. You could be typing in your mechanical keyboard, and the keyboard will just suddenly power off because the Pi panicked and cut the juice.
Oh.
Yeah. So you have to stress test the system at full load on the bench and confirm it doesn't throw under voltage warnings.
Okay. Get it working ugly, then make it pretty.
Exactly.
So we've planned it. We've built it. It boots from the fast drive, it stays cool, and the power is perfectly stable. Now we transition into the final two modes, which are arguably the most philosophical parts of the self-driven ethos: tend and chill.
This is where it gets really interesting.
Yeah, because having a rugged machine is only half the battle. The true value is how you maintain it and how you actually live with it in your day-to-day life.
It really is a shift from hardware engineering to lifestyle design.
Let's start with the caring mode, tending the machine. It's about establishing a rhythm of maintenance. Like, you image the SSD to a backup drive once you have your software dialed in.
Which saves you a weekend of tears if something breaks.
Exactly. And you run your apt full upgrade commands on a monthly schedule.
Which, for those who don't know, is simply telling the Linux operating system to reach out to the internet, find the latest security patches and library updates, and apply them cleanly so your core software doesn't rot over time.
Right. And physically, you have to maintain it too. You have to periodically blow the dust out of that mandatory active cooler we talked about earlier.
Dust is a massive issue. A clogged fan is the quiet killer of small computers.
Yes, it is. And we absolutely have to talk about the safety protocols with these custom batteries.
Oh, this cannot be overstated. When you are dealing with 18650 lithium cells, you must use protected cells.
Meaning they have tiny built-in circuits to prevent over-discharging.
Yes. And you must use a dedicated battery management chip.
Yeah.
You never, ever charge loose lithium cells unattended.
Because a thermal runaway lithium fire, where the battery essentially feeds its own chemical fire happening inside a plastic box on your desk, is, well, catastrophic.
It is dangerous, serious physics. You respect the battery. But tending isn't just about preserving your hardware. There is a deep cultural aspect to this caring mode within the Cyberdeck community.
You're talking about open source.
Yes. When you build a deck, you are standing on the shoulders of countless people who figured out the pinouts and the code before you.
Right.
So when you finish your custom case, you open source your work. You publish the STL files.
The digital blueprints for the 3D printer.
Exactly. The blueprints that tell a 3D printer how to physically recreate your case. You post them online so the next person can start where you finished. You document your mistakes on forums.
Because the whole scene survives on people who answer questions they once had to ask. Your frustrating 2 a.m. troubleshooting session becomes the exact solution someone else will desperately search for 3 months from now.
It's a beautiful cycle of knowledge transfer.
It really is. So you tend the machine and you tend the community. Which finally brings us to the fourth mode, chill. Living with the device.
The best part.
This is where all that effort pays off. The overarching philosophy here is that the deck should be offline first, by default.
It's airplane mode with intent.
Yes, I love that. You load your local files, your local notes, your local music onto that massive drive. When you open the deck, there are no infinite feeds.
Nope.
There are no algorithms running in the background dynamically trying to serve you targeted ads. There are zero push notifications pulling at your peripheral vision. It is completely, wonderfully quiet.
So peaceful.
But so, what does this all mean? Why go through the trouble of wiring a complex computer just to disconnect from the internet?
What's fascinating here is how the community distills this down to a single, incredibly powerful philosophical metaphor.
Right.
Attention is a battery, not a tap.
Oh, let's hover on that for a second. Attention is a battery, not a tap.
Think about the mechanisms of our commercial devices, right? Your smartphone treats your attention like a tap, like an endless pressurized flow of water they can just turn on and leave running forever.
Yeah, that's exactly how it feels.
They use intermittent variable rewards like a slot machine to spike your dopamine and keep you scrolling. But human attention doesn't work that way.
Right.
It's a battery. It has a finite capacity, it drains over the course of the day, and it requires literal rest to recharge.
And when you build an offline-first cyber deck, you actively rewire that dopamine response. You remove the constant ping of notifications so your brain stops anticipating that random reward. You
Yeah.
physically lower your baseline stress level.
Exactly. And the cyber deck forces you to confront that reality physically. When you use a field deck, you are acutely aware of its actual battery.
Because you wired it.
Yes. You know exactly how much runtime you have. You watch the voltage drop. The machine demands that you respect its physical battery, which serves as a daily tactile reminder to respect your own mental battery.
You are creating a device that waits for you to have a thought rather than a device that constantly thinks at you.
Beautifully said.
It's the ultimate tool for calm computing. But there is a trap here, isn't there? Done is a place to rest.
Ah, yes, because the tinkering is endless.
Right. The deck is technically never finished. There's always another GPIO pin you could wire up, another HAT you could attach, another piece of software you could compile from scratch.
It's addictive in its own way.
But you have to resist the urge to leave the machine in pieces on your workbench forever. A working, slightly imperfect deck in your backpack, out in the real world, is infinitely better than a perfect disassembled deck on your desk.
Absolutely.
You have to actually sit in that quiet, offline room you built and do the thinking.
It comes back to the very first question of the curious mode. What is this deck for? If your goal is just to learn hardware, endless building is fine. But if your goal is to reclaim your agency, you have to wield the tool you made.
You have to actually live with it. And that brings us full circle on the journey we've just taken. We started with this realization that most of us are walking around with sealed boxes of rented computing, machines engineered by massive corporations to harvest our time.
And we move from that state of passive tenancy to active sovereignty
Yeah.
by planning the physical space, building a repairable machine, tending to its software and its community, and ultimately living with a device where you understand every single wire, a device where your attention belongs entirely to you.
It's such a profound shift in perspective. It really makes you evaluate the tools you touch every single day, which leaves us with a final thought for you, the listener, to mull over.
Yeah, this is a good one.
If our attention truly is a finite battery, and our commercial laptops and our smartphones are expertly, ruthlessly engineered to drain it dry, what other sealed boxes in our daily routines, beyond just our computers, could we open up, dissect, and rebuild from scratch to reclaim our personal sovereignty?
Are there other areas of life where we've traded our agency for convenience?
Exactly. Because once you know how to pop the plastic shield off the engine, you start seeing those shields everywhere, and you start realizing you actually know how to build your own engine.